Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
This morning I'm going to talk about Zen and koans. And in preparing this talk, I started thinking about my own entryway into Zen and finally ending up with koan work. And early on, you know, I did learn to meditate. I had a mantra, and Maharishi, who was a guru that was well known back in the 70s. And eventually my path, I encountered Zen as part of my path. And I remember that I was very interested in reading a lot of books about Zen, Alan Watts, and having these discussions with friends. But whenever I encountered koans, I sort of pushed it aside. You know, I would read these things and I had no idea what they were talking about. And I go back to my philosophy and my philosophy discussions about Zen. And, you know, a few Zen teachers along the way. I started out with Edo Roshi and the Zen Studies Society in New York, and then with Bernie Glassman. You know, with each of these teachers, you know, I thought meditation was enough. Of course, it is enough. But somewhere, eventually then, through Ray Cicchetti from the M.P. Bowles Zendo, I encountered Bob Kennedy. And I would get up at 4:30 in the morning, twice a week, and go into Jersey City and sit. And I may have told this story before, I don't know, but I knew, well, for Ray, for example, and I knew other students were doing koan work. I think the main barrier that I had with entertaining koans was that I would embarrass myself, that I would go to see Roshi and I wouldn't know what the hell I was talking about, and I would appear like a fool. And I also sort of in my mind compared myself with others who were sitting there that I knew were doing koans. You know, I had sort of this sense that my mind was going to make me feel less than or get into some kind of crazy competition in my mind with other people. So needless to say, these are, you know, all this nonsense that comes out of our mind, which many times is based on our younger life. You know, this is all disturbing. So I went back to sitting. And then one morning, I went to see Roshi. And I had been sitting more seriously for a while. I said, Roshi, you think I'm ready to start Mu? And he said, and only the voice that he has was, let's do it. So I started with Mu. And that was the beginning. That was sort of a very brief description of the process that I went through. You know, I was really afraid to get into koans because I was afraid to be foolish. But eventually, threw all that aside and dove in. So this talk is going to be about, not about me, but about koans. Moon in a barrel. You never know just when the bottom will fall out. I'm going to read something that Joan Halifax wrote. Quote, the poet R.H. Blight said that Zen is poetry. What does he mean by poetry? In making this comment, he did not use the word poetry in the sense of what we commonly call verse. Instead, he was referring to the essence of Zen, which, like the world of poetry, comes from spontaneous, natural, unfabricated energy of meeting reality directly. This quality of immediacy is in our everyday practice and is also reflected in the so-called literary body that we call koans. In the same light, Roshi John Tarrant says, quote, a koan appeals to you the way a song or a poem might. If it is interesting in some deep way, then it is for you. He's not talking about the koan being entertaining, but really resonating in your gut. It's a little history. Formal koan study began in the 10th century China. However, over the centuries, the study of koans deteriorated and became formulaic and stilted. It wasn't until the 18th century Japan that the use of koans was revived by Zen master Hakuin. And by Hakuin's time, koan use had deteriorated to the point where traditional answers, quote-unquote, were recorded and sold to students. So after sitting this morning, I'm going to set up a table, and if you have enough money, I will give you the answer to Mu. So in the white plum tradition, which came from Japan, brought here by Maizumi Roshi and was passed on to Glassman and on to Roshi Kennedy, in that lineage, koans are a vital part of practice. Working with koans starts with what are called breakthrough koans. And in our lineage, the traditional breakthrough koan is this Mu. Now, other familiar Zen koans, which are breakthrough koans, are: what is your face before your parents were born? And what is the sound of one hand? Sometimes a student will come with a burning question such as, what happens to us when we die? And the teacher may ask, well, who is it that will die? And this question will become the student's breakthrough koan. Who is it that will die? Another way of saying that is, who are you? Who are you? Once the student has passed the initial koan, the student then works with several traditional collections of koans to deepen and clarify their initial realization. The first book, which this is in our lineage, the first book, which begins with Mu, has 48 koans and is called The Gateless Gate. The next book, The Blue Cliff Record, has 100 koans. The next, The Book of Equanimity, has 100 koans. And the last book, The Transition of the Light, which details the enlightenment experiences of Zen ancestors from Shakyamuni Buddha to Zen Master Dogen, has 50 koans. One final note on Hakuin. Hakuin taught the Rinzai tradition, and in that tradition, emphasis is on sudden awakening, as opposed to the Soto tradition, which focused on gradual awakening, which was grounded or is grounded in just sitting, or as we commonly know, shikantaza. In the white plum lineage, we incorporate both practices. Okay, so we don't focus on one over the other. The choice of which way to practice is based usually on the temperament of the student, and one temperament versus another temperament. There's one is not any better or any less than the other. It's just what is. We each have our temperament. So having briefly described the background of koan study, I would like to say a few words about Mu, the initial koan assigned to students in our lineage, when the teacher discerns that the student is ready to begin koan work. The actual koan is brief and reads as follows. A monk once asked Jashu, has a dog Buddha nature or not? Then Jashu replied, saying, Mu. Now, Mu is defined as no or nothing. So here we have at least the idea or the knowledge that everything is one. Everything has Buddha nature. But Joshu didn't reply, well, what are you talking about? Everything has Buddha nature. He says, no, nothing. Mumon's poem on this koan reads, the dog, the Buddha nature, the truth is manifested in full. A moment of yes and no. Lost are your body and soul. Now the commentary on Mu says, quote, in studying Zen, one must pass the barrier set up by ancient Zen masters. And what is the barrier of Zen masters? Just this Mu. It is the barrier of Zen. Those who have passed this barrier will not only see Joshu clearly, but will go hand in hand with all the masters of the past, seeing them face to face. You will see with the same eye that they see, with the same ear that they heard. And regarding this great barrier, Robert Aitken Roshi reminds us that a barrier is a checkpoint at a frontier. It is a place where you check your mind. Check as in examine, and check as in something you would do with your coat. That is, you leave it at the door. So, just before you enter Daisan, you leave everything you think you know at the door. A koan can also be a point of doubt. In fact, a koan can frequently create doubt in the person working with it. And it is important to note that in Zen, we see doubt not as a problem, but as a benefit, as a classic interchange, a classic interaction, which demonstrate this, occurs between Zen master Jisho and Zen student Hogen. Jisho asks Hogen, "Where are you going?" And Hogen answers, "I am on a pilgrimage." And Jisho asks, "What is the purpose of your pilgrimage?" And Hogen says, "I don't know." It is when we reach a point of doubt in our practice, in our understanding, in our point of view, that we are ripe for a breakthrough. So how would a student actually work with Mu? A simple suggestion would be to join the koan from a place of doubt, of place of I don't know, and keep that with you day and night, this one word, Mu. Become completely absorbed in it. Give up all ideas of breaking through, of gaining insight, of finding an answer. Just become Mu, completely Mu. So when the breath comes in, Mu, and the breath goes out, Mu. After sitting with Mu for some time, ask the question, does a dog have Buddha nature? And how will you respond? Will you say yes, or will you say no? Or will you remain silent? Or will you not limit yourself to these choices? When words are forgotten, in utter clarity, things appear. Thank you.